Our next speaker is Leo Duval. I don't have the privilege of knowing Dr. Duval, but looking at his resume, it appears to be that he's a nuclear physicist.
Yes.
And he's got a particular interest in looking at ancient eclipse records and determining their validity using modern eclipse prediction techniques and determining which are fictional eclipses and which are reliable historical observations. And he's going to talk to us about questioning ancient eclipse records today. Let's welcome Dr. Duval.
After Ralph Chu told us everything about filters, now I will only talk about naked eye observation. In preparing the path of this visit to old solar eclipse records, I used two tools. Namely, the first one is the freeware EMAP Wing, which has been brought out to me by Jean Mews. And the second one is the Pond Criterion, which has been pointed out to me by Xu Chen Tao, who, as I just heard from Professor Stephenson a few minutes ago, died very recently. Oh, no, I take the wrong... sorry. As an introduction to our visit, I would like to say a few words on the great Greek astronomer Hipparchus. In fact, we know very little about him, except that he's probably born in 190 before Common Era. And I would even like to suggest, why not the 14th of March at 8:40 a.m., the time of a total solar eclipse of Vernatia, is supposed birthplace. Let's point out here a further step in speculative history of science. On the internet webpage of the School of Mathematics of the University of St. Andrew in Scotland, it's boldly claimed that Hipparchus used the 190 BCE eclipse for his measurement of the distance between the Earth and the Moon. Well, Ptolemy reported that Hipparchus' most productive years have been between 146 and 127 BCE. Then, Hipparchus might have observed, or at least heard about, the total solar eclipse on April 15, 136 BCE. This eclipse was total over Cyane, the Nile city at the Tropic of Cancer, while it was partial over Alexandria, 500 miles north. Indeed, 100 years earlier, at both same two distant sites of Cyane and Alexandria, Eratosthenes made his famous measurement of the size of the Earth. It is therefore not surprising that even on respectable internet web pages such as AstroCornell Edu, that the famous pair of observation sites of Cyane and Alexandria has also been elected for the measurements of the distance between the Earth and the Moon. The relevant, unfortunate detail is that publicist Cleomedes claimed that a third of a sun disk was visible in Alexandria, while for this eclipse, Emma Quinn gives 8 nymphs. In clear, Hipparchus must have made his two distant side observation during another eclipse. Precisely the one of November 20th, 129 BCE, with totality over Hellespont. And 4/5 occultation over Alexandria. The totality path being particularly narrow for this eclipse, the site of observation is, in my opinion, an utmost clear signature of it. The precise measurement of the magnitude of the eclipse over Alexandria is amazing. It's the first mention ever of a visual quantitative observation of a partial eclipse, and this more than 21 centuries ago, at a time where no modern eye protection devices were available. And this leads us directly to our first topic, namely how one perceives and represents solar eclipses. This collection of drawings have been handed out to me by Serge Kouchmi. They were sketched during the eclipse of July 11, 1991, by observers using only the naked eyes. Maybe you can reduce slightly the light and could be a better contrast. Thank you. Oh, so. Here you have six sketches. I just put them on the same size. It's better compare them. And here I added a picture taken by my friend Boris Filipov of this same eclipse, all in Baja California. Here we have engravings, prehistorical engravings. This one is in Switzerland, and this one in Italy, in Val Camonica. And Swiss astronomer, we have Brunner Bosser, made the suggestion that as it has the same structure, it could be the same eclipse, and it suggested that it would be the eclipse of 885 BCE. Now, in order... we could see the same structure about, but the size of the corona is very different from the engravings in Switzerland and the one in Italy, 70 kilometers apart. And this one is the same picture, but where the central core is the same in order to compare. And for archaeological reason, I would better suggest that it has been the eclipse of 1431 BCE. Here, again, William Brunner suggested that two neighbor places, Fossum and Asperger, in northern Sweden, have been the place where those engravings, observation points and resulting engravings, have been made, because the structure looks a little bit the same, and is suggesting that it would be the 1068 BCE eclipse. But in fact, you have a long list of other candidates, and in my mind, you cannot exclude the possibility even of having another eclipse represented here. Here, it's a more recent eclipse, just before the arrival of Columbus on Cuba. It's in the Sierra de Cubitas, where I think that this painting might represent a solar eclipse. And if it's the case, a good candidate would be the 1452 Common Era, which lasted 4 minutes. Here, it's a comparison of other rock art depiction, possible depiction of solar eclipses, those two under Tropic of Cancer, and those under the Tropic of Capricorn in Argentina. So on the big plate you have those three possible depiction of a solar eclipse. Here, it's in New Caledonia, in Mount Fairway, where possibly again you have a depiction of solar eclipse. I think it could be as well annular than total eclipses, and I just make a suggestion that it could be one of those two eclipses. Here it's a stela of Carthage, and my great-grandfather was indeed the first European to bring back stela from Carthage to Europe. He thought that it was a depiction of the moon and Venus. And personally, I tended to think it represents a solar eclipse, and to be more precise, the one in 478 BCE of the 17th of February. This, in the other stela of Carthage, you have the game which has been played with having a crescent and a disk, just by varying the ratio of the diameter of the disk and the radius of the crescent. Here it's further up in antiquity. According to Jean Leclan, Pharaoh Akhenaten lived between 1364 to 1347. So there have been an eclipse over Thebes in 1360, which was annular, and maybe this is the representation of this this eclipse. Now, how one could safely proceed to retropredict ancient solar eclipse? Kevin Pound tried the following game. He looked at the tidal slowing down of the Earth and used the middle line with deceleration of with the value of 30 t square and two limits which are plus or minus 8% apart this central line, and he found out that all the solar eclipses depicted in the Chinese annals were between those two limits. And of course, if it is true for the Chinese eclipses, it should still be true for eclipses on other continents. I will just made a check that five of those eclipses were just matching well with Emma Quinn in order to test this program, and test that this criteria was well followed by some eclipses. Now I will discuss more particularly this one, because also this one is very, very important. The reference to this text are very difficult to understand to me. I'm not too fluent in Chinese, so I concentrated on this one, which was reported in the paper of Shushan Tu and Stevenson in 1989. There is a difference in the paper of Professor Stevenson and this translation. It's, well, here you have the engravings, and here you have more clearly visible the Chinese character. So it's the character free, and here a character which means trap, and here it means eat and the sun, and big and star. So free, it has been translated by three flames eat the star, and it could be understood as a depiction of an eclipse. Now, 15 years ago, so this strange character of trap has been taken by a nomograph, and Kevin Pang had the idea of using not only a nomograph but also a nomophone, namely the word Xian and Yan, and we would like to have the character flame, but in fact we have another character, but which is graphically similar and also phonetically similar. So in order to test if it's a solar eclipse, then does this make sense to say three flames eat the sun at this time? So it's 3,000 years ago. It was common in Chinese to use one word instead of another. So a confusion by the guy hearing what somebody says and writing it down. So it's interesting to see a comment, because there is like a political story behind that. I just received, because my idea, in order to prove that it's connectable to this eclipse, I was suggesting just to take a little piece of this turtle bone and make an AMS measurement. So as this bone is has been taken out of Anyan, where it has been found, and brought to Taiwan, so 50 years ago. So I asked by the Academia Sinica if it would be possible to make an AMS on a little bit of this turtle bone. And the answer I received from Mr. Tsai Chemer is that the particular auricle bone I'm referring, you're referring to, does not in the least mention a solar eclipse, though I am well aware it has been so interpreted quite wrongly. So between Taiwan and mainland China, there is a dispute between astronomers and philologues about the significance of this text. And so it's very difficult. I don't see exactly, maybe somebody will have some ideas how to convince Academia Sinica of Taiwan to allow a little bit of this bone to be used for an AMS measurement. Now, Kevin Pang suggested this date, while Bill McMurray suggested just another eclipse 2 years earlier. So concerning the Pang's criteria, both are well compatible, although this one maybe was twice longer, so maybe more impressive, but there is another point here describing that the day of the eclipse was the 53rd day out of the 60-day cycle, and unfortunately for the hypothesis of Bill McMurray, this one just fall on the 37th day out of 60, and this it's like if you would say it happened on a Monday, and in fact it happened on Friday. So you don't have the right day of the week. You don't know the year, but the day of the week, Chinese week of 60 days, is indicated on this oracle bone. Now, even earlier eclipse, we see that the one of 1360 is compatible with Pons criteria, and but it is an annular eclipse. Well, maybe they damaged their eyes, but it was a 98% magnitude, so not too bad. Again, for this eclipse, Bill McMurray suggests another possible one, but the date is 1338, which is in complete contradiction with all what we know about the chronology of Egyptian pharaohs. So I think it would be interesting to make some calibration of the new AMS calibration of papyrus in order to find out if the theory of McMurray to change completely the chronology of pharaohs is right or wrong, because the carbon 14th measurement, which has been done 20 years ago here in the UK, so it gives a very broad margin, and all hypotheses are possible. So one should use the eclipse in order to calibrate new material like papyrus, because it's a fast-growing plant, and Pharaoh Akhenaten just change the site of his capital, possibly just after this eclipse. So it would be a possibility to find a new way to get sure of the datation of the Egyptian pharaohs. Now, I'm turning to another eclipse, so-called Pindar eclipse, where he rode to a Theban beam of the sun, surrounded by rushing forth on a darksome track, and an inexplicably violent snowstorm. And there are two possibilities, and one is February 17, 478 BCE, or April 30, 463 BCE. Because once he was 40, the other 54, and we don't know when he wrote this art to the Theban. And as he's speaking of snowstorm, so I would prefer to select February instead of April, but it's difficult to know what was the what was really the weather at those ages. And the problem with 463 is that, in fact, even if you take the extreme value of 32.5, it's missing feet. And well, one can argue that maybe maybe he was in Sicily and he thought that he wrote to the Theban from Sicily. By the way, we see also that this eclipse is missing Carthage. Now, I have another suggestion to make, namely that the eclipse was the 478, and it was annular over Phi, and over Carthage, if you look at the iconography of the stella in Carthage, then it might have inspired people, with of course some eye damages to take in consideration, because you have only a magnitude of 92% is maybe dangerous. But probably on Thebes in Greece, Pindar was able to see this this effect, and the value of the solution of the Earth is compatible with the Peng criteria. Now, let's turn to another eclipse, the so-called eclipse of Hungary, where you have a lot of candidates. Well, two are out of the Pan's criteria, so, but you can always find something within the Pan's criteria. But now the problem is that it's in cuneiform, and it's a clay tablet, and the problem is it has been read in different ways, but the most recent reading of this text by Denis Pardy, which to my knowledge is the better connoisseur of reading this this type of clay tablet, there is no mention of solar eclipse, but on the helical setting of Mars. Now, I put all the eclipses I talked about on this chart, and I added one in Ashur, but we don't know if this eclipse occurred in Ashur. The site was known, but we don't know the magnitude. If you think that it would only be 93 percent magnitude, then it would get into this to this scheme where it's an eyeball fit to LVI of what could be a low frequency peak at less than a cycle per millennium in the slowing down process of the Earth. So for people interested to check their preferred eclipse, what they looked within this scheme, all the data are available on my website under this title, and some extra copies for people who could not wait to come back to their lab. There are paper copies there. Thank you for your attention.
in Romania in 1968 was discovered the oldest tablet clay from world at 7,000 years. On these are many signs with astronomical significance. These signs were transmitted generation by generation, and now in Romanian village on house are such signs. I have bring here a poster which are around 200 signs with sun and eclipses, which are the same as have you presented. I invite you to
thank you.
Yes. Just a comment. Larry Morris and I have just worked a lot of Babylonian observations, ancient Babylonian observations of scriptures. Through about 50 BC, about 3700 BC, we've got about 130 observations in that room. And we really see it's impossible to do any kind of useful extrapolation of that data beyond about 1000 BC. And I've always been very, very suspicious of the kind of results that people like Pan have been getting, because you have no concrete data to go on. You can only really guess it. And of course, as you quite rightly find out, as you get further back in time, your research gets so wacky, you can really start ending by guessing the dates. And whereas, as I say, you get this side of 700 BC, and you know, you've really got some confident observations. As I say, 130 Babylonian observations alone. And I'll be obviously talking about that tomorrow. But I really think it's very, very dangerous to try to extrapolate beyond 1000 BC. Now you've got a deep trouble that you go beyond that.
I appreciate your point, and here one can see that the really only
very accurate point is the eclipse of Hipparchus, where you have between the second, I put the error bar that between the second and the third contact, and we see that. Compared with all other eclipses I discussed, that's the only one which is a very, very precise point. And any model which try to make any fit of the slowing down of the Earth should consider this point, which is the first excellent measurement made in two sides. So,
let me just add to that. Gerald Toomer at the Brown University spent a lot of time trying to prove that that was 780 BC rather than 129. And, you know, I've never been able to argue with that. So I wouldn't necessarily say that data is accurate, because it's not mentioned at all in the text. It has to be sometime in Hipparchus' lifetime or so. Or in fact, even earlier than that. So I would even think 129 BC is just a guess. In my book, I devoted quite a lot of work to that several pages. So, I mean, I think we've got to work on accurately datable sources only. And if we've got those, we can't do any better than that.
This is obviously a lively topic of discussion for years to come. We'll be watching eagerly as some new historical records are uncovered and more data accumulated. And thank you very much. We'll continue.